Welcome to the Swallow Your Pride podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Richard. I'm a board-certified specialist in swallowing and swallowing disorders, a mobile fees business owner, and founder of the MedSLP Collective. This podcast is all about delivering the latest evidence-based practice to medical SLPs everywhere. Whether you're a new clinician seeking tangible tools for treatment or a seasoned vet stuck in a rut, my goal is to help ditch the old-school ways of the past that no longer serve you or your patients, to reinvigorate your passion for our field, to broaden your knowledge about our scope of practice, and to inspire you to practice at the top of your license. So if you're listening, I encourage you to swallow your pride, be open and willing to learn, because let's face it, your patients deserve that kind of care. With that, let's dive right in. Just a quick disclaimer that all statements and opinions expressed in this episode do not reflect on the organizations associated with the speakers and are their own opinions solely.
All right. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. It's my honor.
Yeah. So tell the people a little bit about yourself.
I'm an author, and I gave up the literary life to become my mother's primary caregiver. And that journey, which was something I had never thought I could do, led me to write, it's a guidebook cookbook for setting up and running a dysphagia kitchen, because when my mother was diagnosed, there was nothing that told me how to do it. And of course, the household is thrown into a tizzy because it's a big responsibility for someone else's health and healing. So that's the journey that I went on. I was encouraged by my mother's primary care physician. He said, gee, your mom is doing so well, and we healthcare providers, we need tools to give to our patients and their caregivers. So you have the skills to do this. Why don't you do it? And that's how it started. So I found out something, though, that being a caregiver taught me the caregiver's perspective, and it, where I thought I was going away from my literary career, it opened up my heart and my writing got better because it was not, I wasn't in my head as much. I was in my heart, and I was meeting a community of people, the community of caregivers, the community of healthcare providers, the SLPs, the dietitians, they're fabulous communities. Instead of being isolated, alone in a room with my computer and my research and my writing, I had people. It was, and so it turned out to be better for my health and my own writing, you know. I became an independent publisher. And for a long time, I was the only publisher in the country of a line of ebooks for dysphagia. And then I wanted to reach a wider audience. So I wrote the book that I'm now speaking about, which was for a wider audience. From the caregiver's point of view, it's setting up and running a dysphagia kitchen, and it's to avoid caregiver burnout. It's to give the patient and their caregiver variety. And the single most important choice that anybody can make in a dysphagia household is the nutrition, because it has the most direct effect on quality of life and mood and feeling cared for. And it's completely under the patient's control. So I decided to write the book where people could use it to adapt their own kitchen to a dysphagia kitchen step by step. And it's the book that I wish I had when my mother was diagnosed.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all that. You know, it was so interesting about one thing that you said was when I wrote my first book, you know, I wrote a book called So You're Having Trouble Swallowing for Patients. And what was interesting was I wrote it from the perspective of the issues that I had with my son. And it flowed out of me. Like so much of it just, I'd say 2/3 of it came out super, super, super easy because it was just from the heart and my experiences, you know. And then I had to go back and add in more of the technical dysphagia language from being an SLP. And that part took me forever because it was just so like technical and I knew that stuff, but it was so much easier to just write from my experiences as opposed to the technical stuff. So I completely know what you mean. You know, mine was sort of the reverse order of your experience, but
I understand exactly what you're saying. If you recall, the first time I was on your podcast, you were discussing the fact that I originally wrote this. My mother's household was, she had decided to age in place. She did have a healthcare facility that she had paid for. She didn't want to go. And she asked me if I would be her caregiver, which I agreed to. Then when I was on your podcast, you described to me how what your schedule was like, that you had a family member that you had to make dysphagia food for your son, and then make food for the family and with a full-time job. So I structured my book to be for the dedicated single person with dysphagia, for family and friends, and also my recipes can be adapted if there's a chef in a care facility that wants to expand their repertoire or get some, they can use my recipes, and I have the directions in the book of how to scale it up if they have, more than 6 to 8 people, if they need it for 30 or 40 or 50 or 200 people. So, and then the other use, which people don't recognize so much, is when you have a loved one in a healthcare facility, many of the facilities will allow family and friends to bring food as long as it conforms to the IDSI prescribed level. So my food, of course, is prescribed, gone to the pres I give the directions for a webinar for the prescribed IDSI level, so that the family that's visiting a loved one in a health care facility can bring approved food. I have a colleague who was the head of long-term care at Aetna Insurance for 20 years, and she visited health care facilities all over the state of Florida at every level. And the single most prevalent complaint that she heard was of boring, tasteless food. So when people lose interest in food and they stop eating, their immune system is affected and they're more prone to getting infections. So the object is to keep the person interested and excited about the food. And the way you do this is partly its variety, and partly the first step in converting to a dysphagia kitchen is to make the menu, ask the person their 10 favorite meals, then you know what you're cooking. That's where you start.
All right. Let's take a few steps back here, Diane. I would love to, I know that you've always been passionate about, well, not always, but since your experiences, you've been passionate about this. How did this book exactly come to life? Because we're sharing this from, I've always respected Diane's work. She always reaches out to me when she has great projects going on, and vice versa. We have such a great mutual respect for each other's work. And she invited me to write the first chapter of this cookbook that she just released. And I would love for you to tell people sort of how this whole thing came to life.
Well, when I decided I needed to reach a wider audience, I proposed this book idea to the Mayo Clinic Press because they have what I didn't have, which was the ability to inform. Well, here's what happened. I teach and do lecture demos on the AARP Family Caregiver Support Group. So I speak directly to family caregivers. I know what their needs are. So I was talking about the fact that there are 45 million people in home health care in the US. And the woman who's the moderator, who's a good friend of mine and a very talented and brilliant woman, she said, Diane, it's 48 million. And if you figure that the percentage for dysphagia, it's 8 to 12%, so I figure 10%. That's 4.8 million people. And the food that's available in the marketplace is not as good as the food that you would make it. I mean, you cannot compare it. So I realized there was a need, and that was who I started to address. Those the family caregiver, also professional caregivers, because professional caregivers, CNAs, who may be sent from an agency. My mother had a long-term care policy, so we got to get backup professional CNAs. They are not allowed to cook. They can reheat and serve a meal. So my object was to get the meals. You find out the menu. You make a schedule for your best cooking day. You get everything, your pantry is all set up with all the ingredients you need so that you don't have to run out to the store in the middle of your cooking day. You do your shopping and then you prepare the meal. Now you're integrating the level of IDSI from the beginning, and I give an authoritative webinar teaching how to incorporate the what IDSI is the international standardization for the thickness of the food to aid in the swallow. And everyone is given a prescribed ITZY level when they're diagnosed, and your food has to be to that level. So you have to do it right. So then you make the food, it's to the level, and then what you do is you thicken and you test according to ITZY. Then you divide the food into individual servings. I store them in glass with a lid. And then you freeze them, but you mark the food. You label the food with the date it was created and the use-by date, which is I give with the recipes. And then you put it in the freezer. So by the time you've done a couple of cooking days, you have a variety of entrees. And then I have my own little specialty, which I call the 5-5-5. You make 5 servings of protein, 5 servings of veggies, 5 servings of carbs. And you make different ones and you store them in zips that are labeled so that on an evening when the loved one might not be as hungry, they might want a weeknight meal, they might want a light meal, they may not want a full entree, you say, mix and match. Here, these are the proteins I have. Here, these are the carbs I have. Here, these are the veg. What would you like? And let the person have control over the menu and how much they're eating and how little they're eating. Food is such a pleasure. When the person has the choice over the food, their mood goes up and they are feeling cared for because there's a healing power in food that's been prepared with love. So, what we say is food is medicine, food is love.
Yep, it totally is. Awesome. Thank you, Diane. One thing you said there that I didn't want to interrupt when you said that, but I did not realize that CNAs cannot make food.
This is what, when I had, as I said, my mother had a long-term care policy, so I could get, we had caregivers in the house, but sometimes the agency would send a CNA when we needed a backup. It was covered by the insurance. And we were told by the CNAs that they are not allowed to cook. They can do what is called light cooking, meaning food reheating and serving. So with my the little list that I give of the routine that you do when you convert the kitchen, I have a little video for food reheating and serving because when they reheat, there's a way to reheat. You have a little steamer that goes on your counter, and it can be either a stainless steel, just a stovetop steamer. But now there are many, many, many types of appliances that have steamers, a multi-cooker, a rice cooker, an Instapot. They all have steaming functions. You put the dish that you've just taken from the freezer into the steamer, and you steam for 30 minutes. And at the end of 30 minutes, you test with an instant read thermometer for 165 degrees, and it has to have been at 165 degrees for at least 15 minutes, the food is safe. We like to present the food. We call it dignity in dining. We like to present the food either in a pretty plate, as they do in Asia, when I lived in Japan and I studied this, or piping, where you take the food and you pipe it into shapes. You can do that before you freeze it, or you can do it when you take it out so that you pipe the broccoli and it looks like broccoli and the carrots and so that the plate has a look to it. It's not just a bowl of puree. And so we have that instruction on the my new website, which is when readers have a question for me, when I make a presentation and they have a question, they can reach me, they can ask me a question, and I'm going to put up little short videos that instruct. Because there was so much material to put in this book, and you asked me about how the book came about, Mayo Clinic Press did a fantastic job, and they asked me to have the ITZY material presented by SLPs. And that's why I invited you to submit the chapter, and I had one other SLP, Karen Scheffler, and each approached from a different point of view for the information of the caregiver and the household. And the experts gave that so that the reader could rely upon the information as coming from a healthcare provider. I'm a home cook. I presented the best possible information. But because I included I've got easily 40 pages of scientific information in this book before I get to the recipes and all the rest of setting up the kitchen. So what I decided to do, because we did not have room in this book for another important thing in terms of health and variety, is the purees of the seasons. So I'm going to put up on my website little videos. Each one is for a different, the technique of the season and the ingredients of the season. And this is for variety. I'm keeping up with the big trends in the fine food world. You're not always stuck with the same thing. I have holiday meals, I have specialty meals, I have cooking for one. In other words, you can make your kitchen at home match the personality, the needs, the desires of the loved one with the swallowing condition.
Awesome. I know. I think the book came out awesome. I'm obviously so proud of the work that we put in, and I know, Karen and I spent a ton of time on our chapters, and it was grueling is not the word. It was rigorous, I would say, in the editing process with the Mayo editors and that group. And for that, I appreciate that. So it's one thing when you're going through it, like, ooh, the nuance of every single word that's used and presented. But I very much understand and respect that process for what it is, because Mayo does have such a wide reach and a wide net. So.
They have a newsletter, and they have already put the book out on their newsletter, which goes out globally.
Oh, awesome.
The book is in English, but the way they edited, were absolutely top flight professionals, and they made sure, from their point of view, they could see things that even as an author I couldn't see, or they had experts that they put in teams on the book. They really did a superb job. I felt great because I was presenting your information and Karen's information for the mental comfort of families and the people with the swallow disorder. They're getting the best information, I think, that's available. I really felt, I'm very proud of those chapters.
Yeah, I am too. They came out great.
The whole idea of using the whiteboard is important because you always know what you have on hand. You can go in to the person with the swallow disorder and say, okay, mom, in my case it was mom, what do you feel like eating tonight? Well, I'm not that hungry. Well, this is what I have. I've got steamed fish. I've got, would you like some creamed spinach, or how about some steamed asparagus with, it's all there, and that all it has to do is be heated up if they're feeling like eating a light meal, which I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, I think it's awesome, Diane. I love and respect your work, and it's definitely so needed for patients with dysphagia.
I tried to adapt the practices of the professional kitchen into the home kitchen. So you set up a little puree station on the counter, and it remains there. It's out. It consists of a 3.5 mini food processor, 3.5 cups for one or two servings of puree, or a good blender. And that you will use multiple times a day. So I give advice on how to pick it, how to go into a bricks and mortar store, see what you like to use, see what's the right size for your counter, see what you feel comfortable with, and I give advice on, which are the good ones and not. But that you're going to use several times a day for breakfast, for lunch, for snacks, and you're going to wash it several times a day. So it's like the sous chef station in a professional kitchen. I adapted that as a principle for at home.
It's interesting, as long as I've done this podcast, we've had a few different speakers come on to the podcast that had former previous, chef life or had cooking experience in a professional kitchen in the past. And the tips that they give are, to some of us that work with these patients every day, even, preparing food for my son, it's, the tips that they give, it's like mind blowing. So I always appreciate when we have people from other professions come in and help us with those.
Well, the country as a whole is now becoming more aware of the caregiver point of view, because the actor director Bradley Cooper did a big documentary on PBS about ca family caregivers. It raised people's awareness because of the importance of maintaining the health of the person who was in the at-home medical environment, so that they didn't wind up in hospitals and they didn't wind up with bacterial pneumonia, which is very hard to cure. So what I say to people when I do the lecture demonstrations, the caregivers are responsible for someone else's life or death, because if you don't do it right, they can choke to death, they can aspirate, they can get, the downside is that it can be life-threatening. So this is important, and now we're beginning to recognize it, and we're caring about the needs of the caregiver. The education of the SLPs and the dieticians, they educate the caregivers and the patients, and then the patients have the information to transform the home, So it is a process of awareness.
Yep, it really is.
The piping is fun. You can, that's the other thing. I say to the caregivers, I give them a list of pick the day that's light to do your cooking. In the beginning, it'll take you several days of cooking to get the freezer stocked. If you need help, don't be afraid to ask for it. Let somebody else chop the onions or, peel the carrots or whatever. If you make a mistake, you can fix it. Don't get upset. It's a learning process. But the whole idea of when you make the food at home, you're using the other senses of the person with the swallow disorder. And I had this advice from a psychiatric nurse. She said, we like they have the sense of smell, they're smelling the food cooking, that you let them see the veggies that you're using or the food when it's prepared before you begin to modify the texture and puree it. I used to say, here, mom, here's the lasagna. I'm gonna, puree this for you, type of thing, so that you're engaging their other senses. And then the other thing that I think is very important in some of the videos that I'm going to be putting up, my new website is just www.cookingfordysphagia.com. It's not quite up and running yet. And you can reach me, Diane, at cookingfordysphagia.com. I had a very eminent speech language pathologist locally here in Florida, which is my county, is ground zero for geriatric medicine in the US. He said, as long as the guidelines are met for the safe swallow, it is all right for the loved one to join in activities with family and friends, as long as you're observing the guidelines for the safe swallow, so that the person does not become isolated and depressed eating alone all the time. So that's why I have in one of my little videos a game day buffet where the family and friends can eat, but also the loved one gets their texture modified. So, one of the things that I'm hoping to do with all the healthcare providers when Dysphagia Awareness Month comes up in June of every year, I'm going to suggest David Fagan, who's an eminent SLP here, he said that he would like it if restaurants could have a designation on the menu of a puree designation, because we have diabetic foods, gluten-free foods, lactose intolerance foods, and he said that he thought it would be great if there were one or two dishes that could be pureed and brought to the table where they could be thickened by the family and friends. But the whole idea that one did not have to be isolated from the restaurant, because that leads to depression. They get depressed. They don't get to go. Everybody else is going out and having fun, and they have to stay home alone and eat in the bedroom all by themselves. Boring. Boring.
You're right, Diane. I mean, honestly, it's I would say probably was the biggest issue with my son of, we would just never go out for a few reasons, but also he could just never eat, what we were eating or on the menu or just, his school does a really good job of taking him, they go on field trips and they make sure they take them to places where the kids can get, mashed potatoes or they know it's a macaroni and cheese that's very, very, easy to mash up very well, and it's interesting because I think, you're dealing with your mom as a you are the caregiver for your mom, I'm the caregiver for my son, but across the lifespan we all have the same needs, and we all want to do
Exactly.
the same things. We all want to take our family members out to eat. And I commend my son's school. They do a fabulous job of always trying to include him in social activities with his peers and order the food that he can eat. And it's tough. You know, there does need to be a lot more awareness and a lot more guidance around it, because, you know, like, it's easy to just order a side of mashed potatoes, but every kid doesn't want to eat mashed potatoes.
Well, that's why we were suggesting that they have a couple of dishes on the menu that are pureed, and they could be a regular diet, and then for the vegans, you know, for the vegetarians or vegans. But that would only be, I mean, if the timing were right, you could bring one of your meals from home if they would puree it when you get there, if, you know, and then you thicken it at the table. If but or now they have wireless, you know, like BlendJet blenders that you could blend right at the table. But the whole idea is to, you know, make it accommodating. And that's why in the game day book that I'm putting up, I'm going to put up the special occasion meals with the instructions, because what I put in there, in one of them, I have the Japanese, they call it shabu shabu, where it's a hot pot where everybody's cooking in one, you put whatever you want into a bowl of broth, and then you spoon your serving into your bowl, and that could be pureed so that the person could participate in an activity where other people were there, but they're gonna puree, they'll have a little wireless blender, they're gonna puree and thicken their own. The whole idea is not to become isolated, you know. So I think it's a question of, once people realize we have the situation, then they're willing to work with us. They've been willing to work with us. So what I'm trying to do is maybe this year, because the healthcare providers are the ones who have the professional organizations where they can make suggestions like that across a profession. And when the restaurants see, become aware of this, then they can respond to the influence of the healthcare providers, you know, which is better than just one individual saying, gee, can I puree a meal for so and so, you know. What I really wanted to include was the whole idea of, if you follow the handout, I gave a handout to you that people could request and have, where I outline the steps for the transformation. I give you the setting up of the puree station, plus the making of the, what I call, it's the batch cooking. Cook once, eat five times. You know, cook once, eat five times. And then that it goes from beginning to end. So if you have that handout, and then I put a little slideshow up there for the tools that you would have for the puree station, what you would need, and then I have additional tools for the kitchen, so that instead of getting the diagnosis, in my case, I had to research everything. I had no idea. My sister, who was an RN and a very highly educated woman, she used to assist at open heart surgery, she said, well, we can just give mother baby food. Well, you cannot give mother baby food because it doesn't have the nutrients for an adult, you know. So even healthcare professionals, some of them need this. But anyway, if you follow from beginning to end, you have a step-by-step introduction to transforming a home kitchen to what I call a dysphagia kitchen. You're saving time, you're saving money, you're saving labor, and when you make it yourself, you know what's in it. There are many ways that people get food now. They have home meal service delivery. They have ingredient delivery. I'm not judging anything. I'm telling you, once you can use your own recipes, you can use my recipes, you can get takeout. But the trick is to prepare the food and store the food, make it dignified, dignity in dining, make it look good so that it's appealing. So that's basically, and as I said, I'm going to put little videos up for the little questions of, like, how to use a particular appliance, a kitchen appliance. Namely, the other thing I want to say is, I have named the best techniques of cooking for the dysphagia kitchen, and those are the techniques which render foods moist and tender. You do not want to use roasting, you know, heavy duty baking, heavy duty grilling, because it makes particles on the food that are bad for the swallow. So each one of those techniques comes with a set of ingredients of the season, and that prevents boredom. You can look at them in any order, you can adapt them, and the whole idea is variety, so the patient doesn't get bored, and then versatility, so that the home cook can also have the choice and everything. So that's what the way I've organized it is by when you go through the seasons, you can go through in order. Cooking for one, I have a little video where somebody has a desire for something and you're cooking for one. I have desserts, which is a big thing. Desserts are a big thing and there are not that many available. So you can pick and choose what you like and what you need. And as I said, I'm available to consult. I'm available to coach. You can ask me questions and I'll answer your questions. It's a question of education. It's caregiver and patient education. That's what it is.
Well, thank you, Diane. This is a great book. It's such a great resource for anybody that's, starting out with their journey with dysphagia or caregiving for somebody with dysphagia. It's very, very thorough. Like I said, Karen and I wrote the first few chapters of the technical swallowing language, and Karen did an awesome job with her chapter two. And then Diane, everything that you added, and the whole Mayo Clinic team that jumped in to do all the editing. So, do you know where people can purchase the book if they're interested? Or,
I'd like to say one more thing about those two chapters are critically important for everyone to read because it takes the mystery of IDSI and for example, in your chapter where you talk about what are the questions a person can ask if they've received a diagnosis, it was an obvious thing that you put there, but people don't think about that. The caregiver has a lot of questions, so does the patient. And your chapter had all that. Then what are the tests? What are the best practices? You answered all those questions. So by the time the person gets done reading that, they're more relaxed. Then they get the technique of here's the test, here's the measurement, here's how you do it. And then what we always do in my book, following the Mayo Clinic practice, is we offer further resources. So that the person who needs more, I'm giving them the basics, but I give them where they can get authoritative information that can be relied upon. And among the things are every ethnic cuisine in the world has IDSI applied to it. It's in multiple languages of the world. So for the ethnic cuisines, you refer to IDSI.org. It has all the information and all the videos posted up there. The other thing that's very important is for lower income families who need help, we give them the connection to dysphagia outreach. For example, a refurbished top of the line blender, which is very inexpensive, but for lower income people to get help, we want everyone to be able to get the information and implement it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Diane.
Oh, where can they buy the book? Amazon or Barnes and Noble or any place books are sold. You just either put the title of the book or put my name in and it will come up. It's widely available. And I hope that I dedicate this to my mother's memory. I do this work in her memory because I created this for her. And I know that she would love it if what I created for her was of help to others. That's my memorial to my mom.
Oh, awesome. Thank you, Diane. Yeah, so the title of the book is Cooking for Dysphagia and Other Swallowing Disorders, 101 Delicious Recipes and Techniques for Safe, Easy Eating. And it is published by the Mayo Clinic Press. So thank you for all of your hard work on this, Diane, and thank you for including me in the project. I was eternally grateful for that opportunity. So thank you.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to download the show notes from this episode, please visit swallowyourpridepodcast.com. There you can also sign up for our email list so that you'll never miss another episode. If you do like what you hear, then please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or share it on social media with your friends and colleagues because that is what keeps these episodes coming. If you'd like to be a guest, share feedback, or request a topic to be discussed on the show, please email podcast@teresarichard.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.